Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our 3 Ideas in 30 Minutes, a global edition for those listening online who do not live here in Boca Raton. And even those who are here, not members of BRS, we encourage you to support our global campaign, brsonline.org/global. Please help us get to our finish line so that Rabbi Goldberg and I can stop talking about it and get back to our day jobs. Of course, tonight, we always have a hot dog of the week. I got to go with Jason Asher. I don't know what was in that thing, but that was an overloaded hot dog with copious amounts of ketchup, mustard, spicy mustard, and spicy onion rings. What?
Spicy mayo.
Spicy mayo and onion rings and relish, I think I saw in there. Yeah. It was like a loaded hot dog. So Jason Asher, his wife, that's how I know your wife does not listen to this, because if she did, she would yell at you every single week that I think you win more than anybody else. All right, anyways, our Parsha Chabura is generally sponsored by Marilyn Michael Fedak. In gratitude for the many weekly learning opportunities at BRS, we are grateful to the Fedaks for their constant sponsorship and friendship. And we are grateful to Danny and Hoodie Krasna, who are sponsoring this evening in memory of Avram Yitzchak ben Asher Zelig on his yurtzeit. His neshama should have an aliyah. We are grateful to the Krasnas as well. And of course, we wish them a mazel tov on their new baby girl. Okay, here we go. 3 Ideas in 30 Minutes. We begin with the end of the Parsha. Towards the end of the Parsha, of course, we read the conclusion of the story, depending on how you define it, of Matan Torah. And there the Torah tells us that, based on Rashi, that Hashem, when they glance a vision of Hashem in the heavens, they see that there is the Demus Levena, that there's almost the imagery of a brick that is standing, that is sitting underneath Hashem. And Rashi says that it was before Hashem, B'shas HaShibud, that it was before Hashem, the entire servitude in Mitzrayim, to remember the suffering of the Jewish people. Okay, that is the very famous Rashi. Ask the Sefer HaMusar VeHadas the following question, Avram Yafin. What is the significance of a brick? Why is it a brick? You would think that if Hashem wanted to remember something, so he would take some grandiose memory of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. A brick, after all, is relatively nothing. And he gives a very beautiful suggestion that I want to develop here with you this evening. He says, Darcham shel Rishayim, it is the way of the wicked. Lios mushpan biyoser mimare neim v'chashuvim shema shemashi yikaimu b'mo yedehem yelo kiyam nitzchi. Wicked people assume that what's going to last for eternity are the actions that they do, or the grand actions that they do. If you go into the next paragraph, he says, Kama yeshlis bal mizeh shebemara gadol shesig Yisrael b'sinai. What is it that they see? Lo armonos pe'er v'heicha malachim. Hashem does not have grandiose palaces or structures. Af lo migdalim ramim usharim mikushtatim ra'usham. It's not fancy, elaborate buildings. That is not what Hashem has in heaven. What does Hashem have in heaven? He has a brick. What does a brick represent, he writes? A brick represents the sacrifice. A brick represents the hard work. Everything else is temporary. What is the significance of this? The significance of this, he writes, is Kol amal anosh v'yigiyasam bisharim lo asu roshim b'makom niskav zeh. All of our work, everything that you and I think has value, everlasting value, in reality, it is ephemeral, it is short-lived, and it is not going to outlive us. We can build big buildings, we can put our names on palaces, we can put our names on structures, on event centers in Washington, D.C. You can put your name on anything you want, but it's all short-lived. That says the Sefer HaMusar VeHadas is not what impressed Hashem. When Hashem chooses to have one memory of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, it is not anything grandiose. It's not the stuff. What is it? It's a brick. A brick that represents the sacrifice and the hard work. And he writes, that is what impresses Hashem more than anything else. Rak halavanim b'hem avdu Yisrael shal yadam nitzrafu v'huchshuru liyitzias Mitzrayim umatan Torah. What impresses Hashem is the hard work and the sacrifice that you put in. And therefore he writes, shum aleinu l'shanein tamid latzmenu. He says, we have to constantly drill this into our minds. Shagam migardei haschachim v'yitziros ha-technologica. With all of our technological advances, with all of AI and all the impressive things that are coming out, none of that's what impresses Hashem. What impresses Hashem is not the size of your house. It's not the type of car you drive. It's not the amount in your bank account. It's not your technological innovations. None of that, he writes, is what impresses Hashem. Again, none of this grandiose stuff is what impressed Hashem. None of this is everlasting. In other words, it's not impressive. What impresses Hashem, he writes, what impresses Hashem are the bricks. Now, what's amazing is, a brick, do you even notice? When's the last time you've walked by the building and you see a little brick in the side of the building? It's almost inconsequential. It's very easy to walk by an entire building and not notice it at all. In fact, part of the beauty of our building campaign here is you really get to see how each part fits one to another, and without any one part, the whole thing collapses. But if you go to a full structure, if you go to a full building, you don't notice one of the bricks. You notice the magnitude of the structure itself. That's what we see. But what Hashem sees is something entirely different. Hashem sees the bricks. What's impressive to Hashem is the sacrifice and the hard work that goes in to our successes. Not the successes itself, not the big structures and not the fancy cars, not the big houses and not the vacations. None of that. What impresses Hashem is the hard work that we are willing to put in. So I think that's a very important reminder to us. Sometimes we get caught up in headlines. Sometimes we get caught up in the magnitude of things and we lose sight and we forget that ultimately none of that is ultimately important. What's important is the stuff that we put hard work into, the stuff that we're willing to sacrifice for on behalf of Hashem, on behalf of Torah and Mitzvot, on behalf of the Jewish people. Of course, we have our soldiers here this week. We have peace of mind here this week. 21 soldiers from the Golani unit who served together. They're a Miluim unit. They went into Kfar Aza on October 7th. They served in Gaza for a little while, and then they served in Lebanon for a long period of time. They suffered heavy losses. They're going to speak about it a little bit on Shabbos, the significance of what that loss means to them. But one of the things that I was thinking the entire week is this idea of the Musar Ve'Adas, right? A lot of these guys, one of them lives in Kiryat Arba. I don't even know what they do for a living. Somehow that never came up this week. What type of house they live in, what type of car they live in, what type of bank account they have. None of that was important at all this week. What was important to me this week as I was talking to them was reminding them over and over again of the importance of their sacrifice. Part of the reason why they come to America, everyone asks, why can't they do it in Israel? Part of the reason why they come to America is it puts their sacrifice in the context of the broader Jewish people. They now understand that they weren't just fighting a war for Israelis or for their neighbors, but they were fighting a war that extended itself all the way to us here in Boca Raton. They can't understand that we daven for them and we think about them and we appreciate them and that their sacrifice matters to us as well. And once they realize that, it gives importance and it gives holiness and it gives context to the sacrifices that they went through. And that in and of itself is part of the nechama. It's part of the processing experience that allows them to overcome so many of those traumatic experiences. I think that is on a magnified level of what the Musar Ve'Adas is saying, that it's the sacrifices of our people that are important. That's what matters to us. That's what's impressive to us. But I think every one of us can apply that in our own lives, that we should never lose sight. If you do something that's hard for you, could be coming to Minyan, could be learning a little bit more, could be not looking at something you're not supposed to be looking at, it could be not getting angry when you want to get angry, could be not yelling at someone, whatever it is that you have to hold back from and you have to make a sacrifice and you have to work hard on. Could be something that no one else knows and no one else sees. No one else is going to know that you got up 15 minutes earlier this morning. No one's going to know that you stayed up a couple minutes late at night. No one's going to know that you didn't say the Lashon Hara. But those are the moments that are most impressive to Hashem. It's not the big palaces. It's not the big things that we do. It's the small acts of sacrifice and hard work that we are willing to put in that ultimately matter to Hashem. That is what's symbolized by the brick. The brick represents the hard work. The brick represents the sacrifice. That was what was most cherished to Hashem. That is idea number one from the Musar Ve'Adas. I think a very beautiful idea. Idea number two comes from Moshe Weinberger. This was a drasha that Rav Weinberger gave in 5777. So that's 9 years ago. 9 years ago, Parshas Mishpatim. This is an idea not on the Parsha, but of course this Shabbos is not just Parshas Mishpatim. It is Parsha Shkalim. Parsha Shkalim. So Parsha Shkalim, Ramosha Weinberger points out, there is a typo in whoever wrote this up. It is not the first Mishnah in Megillah, it's the first Mishnah in Shkalim. But the first Mishnah in Shkalim says that on the first day On the month of Adar, on the first of the month of Adar, which is going to be next week. Next week, of course, we bench Rosh Chodesh. So a proclamation is made that the people should give the half shekel and about kelaim. That if there was kelaim, in other words, you're not allowed to breed two types of plants or animals, so you have to uproot it. So in the basin used to go around, and if they saw kelaim, they used to pull it out of the ground, essentially, for those who've learned the Mishnayos and Shkalim. So that's what happened on the first day of Adar. Ask for Moshe Weinberger such a fundamental question. What do they have to do with each other? Is it just a coincidence that on the first day of Adar, it talks about the half shekel, and coincidentally, it also talks about kelaim, the intermingling, the grafting, the breeding of two plants that are supposed to be separate and distinguished? What is the connection between the two of them? I think that's such a great question. And Weinberger develops the following idea. I'm obviously not going to read the whole thing inside. Baruch Hashem, I think everyone here can read English. But I'll try to summarize what he's trying to say. Rav Weinberger understands the symbolism of the word shekel, in particular the half shekel, and the symbolism of the word kilaim. Shekel, he quotes on the Beis Yosef here, means lishkol. Lishkol means to weigh. So there, you're talking about the weight of a coin. But the Beis Yosef says, if you look on the fifth paragraph, the Beis Yosef says that the rule of life is that a person must weigh, he must be lishkol, on the scale of his mind, all the details of his life. When there's an opportunity to go somewhere or do something, one must weigh, measure, and clarify in his mind. What is he about to do? And what is he considering reading? Or the words that he is considering saying? Will it bring delight to Hashem? Will it strengthen godliness? If it will, he should do it. If it's not, he shouldn't do it. So we constantly have to be lishkol. We don't just act. We don't just mindlessly go through the world. But we have what we would call, we introspect. Or we weigh the cost-benefit analysis of, should I do this, should I not do this? So before I say something, maybe it's Lashon Hara. So I think to myself, is this something that's going to contribute to the betterment of the world? Or is this something that's going to hurt another person? Before I speak to another person, is my tone going to increase Kiddush Hashem or decrease Kiddush Hashem? So everything that I do, all of my actions are not just haphazard. They're not just random, but I have to consider my actions. Should I do this? Should I not do this? He writes, therefore, on the bottom paragraph, the Mishnah's instruction to proclaim about the Shkalim means that the purpose of our lives is to use our minds to distinguish and differentiate, to weigh and to measure every thought, action, and word, and to ask ourselves if we are about to do something that gives pleasure to Hashem or not. Okay, that is what it means, lishkol. What it means, lishkol, is we don't just mindlessly wander through the world, but to be a Jew means that there's thoughtfulness, that there's certain mindfulness to the actions that we do, that we're constantly weighing whether this is something that we should be doing or whether it's something we should not be doing. Now, Haman, he describes, in the whole power of Amalek, is that Amalek wants to introduce doubt into our minds. Amalek wants to confuse our minds. And so he points out, for example, that when the Torah, when the Gemara says, Haman mina Torah minayin, where is there a reference to Haman in the Torah? So the Gemara answers that it's from the tree of Eitz HaChaim Tovera, that it was the tree of knowledge of good and bad. What does it mean that that's the reference to Haman in the Torah? The answer is, he writes, that in Chassidus, this world is called the world of doubt, and the tree of knowledge is called the tree of doubt. Amalek has the same numerical value as Suffolk, which means uncertainty, doubt, and confusion. Haman's way of thinking is in play whenever the borders between good and evil, right and wrong, belief and heresy are blurred. And so if Haman represents the sense of confusion, in the sense of doubt, in the sense of uncertainty, Judaism represents this lishkol, that we have to weigh whether I should do something or not. Why? Because that's going to give me a sense of clarity. Then I'm going to understand, I'm going to rid myself of the confusion, I'm going to rid myself of the doubt, and I'm going to understand whether or not this is something that I should be doing or whether or not this is something I should not be doing. And so if Haman's mentality is confusion and doubt, we introduce by the half shekel this notion of mindfulness, this notion of calculating. Should I do something? Should I not do something? To create a clarity of whether I should do it or not. And therefore, he says on the next page, on page number 3, Haman's mentality, this mentality of confusion and of doubt and of uncertainty, that is the world of kilayim. Again, what's kilayim? Kilayim is when you take two things that should be separate and you intermingle them and you graft them together, you interbreed them, you confuse them together. Because that's what Haman wanted to do, not knowing the difference between cursing Haman and blessing Mordechai. While it is true that on Purim it is considered an accomplishment, that is only for someone who knows the difference during the rest of his life. The entire world, says Rav Weinberger, is besieged by this sickness of kilayim. We live in a world of confusion, chevra. Lines that used to be separate are now blurred. Lines between genders, lines between right and wrong, lines between good and evil. We used to understand the difference between the two of them. And now we are living in a world of kilayim, where there's confusion, where marriages and genders and good and evil and right and wrong, they've all been confused. You only need to look at the news recently, chevra. You look at the news, who's good and who's bad, who's right and who's wrong, who's evil and it's all confused. The media tries to convince us that the good guys are really the bad guys and the bad guys are the ones who we should feel bad for. That's what the media has introduced in our language. There's no truth anymore because it's all confused. We live in a world of confusion. I argue that when I went to school, I won't say you and I because we're all different ages, but when I went to school, the goal of education was knowledge. Right? Our teacher was up in the front. They were supposed to give us knowledge. I got news for you. My kids have access to more knowledge in a millisecond than I've had in my entire life between AI and the internet and Google and all the, they can access it. They don't need teachers for information. They're not going to school for information. Any kid can sit on his computer and know more than the teachers knows while they're teaching. So what do we have to educate our children in? It's not giving them knowledge, but it's how to discern that knowledge. It's how to weed out truth from falsehood. It's how to understand that knowledge, because knowledge is being bombarded to them constantly and information is being bombarded on them constantly. They have to know what to trust and what not to trust. They have to know what's good and what's evil. They have to know what's right and what's wrong. And so I believe personally, education is going to change a lot over the next few years, move away from teaching information and more to teaching values, morality, ethics, how to understand this information and decipher when someone's telling you something that's false versus when something's telling you something that's true. We live in a world of kilayim. It's a world of confusion. It's a world of doubt and a world of uncertainty. It's a world of Haman. It's a world of Amalek. But comes along Adar, and what do we say? That we don't just introduce and uproot kilayim. What do? We bring the half shekel. Shekel, as the Beit Yosef says, is from the word lishkol, which means we have the ability, we are empowered to be able to differentiate between right and wrong. We have the ability to differentiate between good and evil. We have the ability to have clarity in a world that is entirely confused. And that's what the half shekel. Shekel means lishkol. Now, why half? Right? We may give a whole shekel. So we know the famous idea that if you're a half and I'm a half, then we make a whole. It's Jewish unity. Beautiful. Listen to what he quotes from the Rupshitzer Rebbe in the Sefer Zera Kodesh. This is such a beautiful idea. It's in Parshas Truma. And he wants to know, why are all of the measurements of the Aron half measurements? We're going to get to this. Every rabbi on the planet's going to talk about it in next week, right? But here, we're talking about the half shekel. Why is everything half? So he writes here, beautifully. He says, he explains that a person's purpose in the world is to break everything open, right? Half means it's not whole, means it's broken open. Our job is to break everything open, to analyze, to examine, to search within himself whether something is right or wrong. In other words, we don't look at the world and just accept it as it is. We look at the world and we shatter it to pieces. We shatter misnomers and we shatter what everyone else takes for granted. And we question it and we search it and we examine it and we analyze it. And so we don't just read a newspaper. We read a newspaper and say, that's funny. That headline is a little bit misleading. And someone who's not educated about Middle Eastern politics is going to read that headline and assume that we are the agitators. So we don't just read something, but we break it apart and we analyze it and we call it out. And so that's why he says it's the half shekel. The half shekel means that we break stuff open because we want to look at it. We want to analyze it and examine it. And that is ultimately the job of the Jew. The job of the Jew is that in a world that is filled of kilayim, a world that is filled of uncertainty and doubt, in confusion, we provide that clarity of thought. We are lishkol. We represent the half shekel because we understand what it means to examine things and to search things and to analyze things. That is what it means, the half shekel. We break it open and we're not afraid. We're not afraid to look at things with an analytical eye and see what we're going to find. We've done that to our great leaders in history. The Torah doesn't minimize the challenges that our avos and imos faced. The Torah puts it out in the open for everyone to look at. And we still talk about the challenges and the failures and the successes thousands of years later so we can learn from it. We don't hide and shy away from that. We break it open and we learn from it. We have to do the same in the world as well. In a world that's filled with confusion, we have to be the voice of moral clarity. That is what it means to defeat Amalek. That is what it means that in the month of Adar, there are two things. There's Kilayim and the Shekel. The Kilayim represents confusion. The Shekel represents a clarity of thought. And that is our job, to bring that clarity of morality and of thought to a world that is utterly confused. That is idea number two. Idea number one came the Vehamusar Vehadas, that what matters to Hashem is not the big palaces and the grand houses, that and the big things that you do know, it's the bricks, it's the moments of sacrifice and hard work where we might hold ourselves back from something, even if no one else is seeing. That is what Hashem loves. That is what is impressive to Hashem. Idea number two is the difference between the Shekel and the Kilayim, that in a world of confusion, we have to be the voice of moral clarity. Idea number three comes from my dear friend, Rabbi Ginsburg. Last week we spoke about Rabbi Ginsburg. We had Shir on Monday because I was going to London. I'll tell you something, this has nothing to do with the Shir. But I get on the plane coming home and I go to the woman, you know, the stewardess, you know, this upgrade maybe, you know, I'm smiling and davening to Hashem in my head. She goes, "You don't want an upgrade." I said, "What do you mean I don't want an upgrade? Of course I want an upgrade. I'm a Jewish. Like, who doesn't want an upgrade?" So she says, "Trust me." She goes, "Go to your seat and you'll see what I'm talking about." So I go to my seat. I've never seen this before in my life. I was the only passenger in my entire cabin. I literally had an entire cabin to myself. I could choose this row, that row, exit row. It didn't matter. I literally had an entire cabin to myself. And then I looked at like business class and premium economy. It was full. And I was thinking to myself, "Ha ha, you fools. You guys paid to be cluttered together. And here I am sitting in my cabin and I'm all alone." First of all, I've never had a flight like that in my life. I stretched out. You know what? Virgin Atlantic. Virgin Atlantic. I'm like, I'll fly them forever. I'm a lifelong customer. Had a whole cabin myself. Anyways, that had nothing to do with the Shir, but it was something that I enjoyed. Okay, anyways. So the wedding was extremely, exceedingly meaningful and powerful. Just an outpouring of Avas Yisrael and unity. I really felt, let's just say I was the only one there not wearing a shtreimel, and yet the love and the respect was palpable. And I really felt, I said to one of the Hasidim there, I said, if this night isn't bringing Mashiach a little bit closer, then I don't know what is. Like, and I really felt it, the unity and the achdus and the love and the respect. It was really, really beautiful. Anyways, so I brought back, they printed for the Ufruf, I quoted it last week, Tzitzim Uprachim, a compendium of Divrei Torah from Rabbi Ginsburg, and I made the mistake. I gave it to Rabbi Goldberg. I gave a copy to Rabbi Goldberg. So he quoted in his Parsha Shir this morning, on Tuesday, so I had to coordinate with him what he didn't use, but he didn't use this idea. Of course, we know that in the beginning of the Parsha, very famous, that they nail the slave's ear to the doorpost, right? We all know this, that if after 6 years of slavery he doesn't want to go free, they nail his ear to the doorpost. And everyone asks why. So Rashi says, because the ear that heard at Har Sinai, you shouldn't steal, all of a sudden went and stole. Again, and so he had to go into indentured slavery, and he chose not to go out. Ask Rabbi Ginsburg the following question, and I never thought of it in my entire life. When the pasuk in last week's Parsha that we're referring to talks about don't steal, what type of stealing is it talking about? Monetary stealing or kidnapping? It's talking about kidnapping. So he says, what's the connection? Last week's Parsha, we told you not to kidnap. And so therefore, you're punished with what? In this week's Parsha, we talk about money. What's the connection about money? Now we're talking about a person who stole money, but the mitzvah, when it was recorded in last week's Parsha, was about kidnapping. You understand the question? Last week's Parsha, the ear that heard at Har Sinai lo signov, that was talking about not kidnapping. But here's a guy who stole money. So the psukim don't match up. Here he's stealing money, there he's stealing people. What's the connection between the two of them? That's his question. And he says the following idea. Now he says it, I saw in the Sfas Emes as well. It's written in a few different places. That what we're talking about here is not someone who stole money. But rather we're talking about here, look at my underline. Nimseim roshali shayr eved. Someone who wants to remain a slave. You know what the problem is? Hu gonev es atzmo. He stole himself. Ki b'makom lios eved l'kadosh baruch hu, that in the place of wanting to be a servant to Hashem, he wanted to remain a servant to mankind. And so the stealing that we're talking about here is someone who stole himself. What does that mean, he stole himself? I'll get to it in a second. But that answers his question. We are talking about kidnapping here. We're talking about someone who kidnapped themselves. They stole themselves. Okay? Now, what does it mean you stole yourself? How do you steal yourself? So the answer is what I believe he's saying. And it's a very powerful idea. And I want you to think about it hard this week, and I think it's a beautiful Shabbos table conversation. Every single one of us has an inner thief. Every single one of us has an inner thief. It's a voice inside of our heads that makes us believe that we are something that we are not. And it steals our identity. So for example, your inner thief could be someone who tells you, you know what? You think you're a good person, Philip? You're not. You're a fraud. It defines who you are. You're someone who gets angry. You are an alcoholic. You are an addict. You are an angry person. So this thief inside of my head comes along and it steals my identity. Because my identity is not that I'm a thief. It's not that I'm an addict. It's not that I'm an alcoholic. It's not that I'm a bad person. No, no, no. At my core, I'm a chelak Elokam Imal. I'm a representative of Hashem in this world. I have a neshama tahora that remains pure forever. I might make mistakes. I might get angry. I might get drunk sometimes. I might get addicted sometimes. I might make mistakes along the way, but none of that defines me. Because at my core, my identity is that I am a servant of Hashem. I am a neshama tahora. I am a chelak Elokam Imal. But each one of us, and I'm telling you, if you think about it, every single one of us has this voice in our head. We have an inner thief. We have someone who comes along and tries to steal our identity. If it's gonev es atzmo, it robs us of who we really are. And so instead of realizing that every single one of us has unlimited, boundless kedusha within us and potential within us, there's an inner thief that comes along and says, Moskowitz, you're not as good as you think you are. That really there's a limit, and that really you're an angry person, really you're a this, and really you're a that. In truth, none of that defines me. I might make mistakes, I'm not perfect, none of us are. But none of our mistakes define us. At our core, we are something special that can never be tainted and can never be manipulated. But we have an inner thief. And that inner thief robs us of who we truly are. And so he says here on the bottom of page 4, Nimsa, Hasiba Shirotzim es Azno Biglashu Kamo Gonev es Atzmo. The reason why we pierce his ears is because he is a kidnapper. He is a thief. He stole a person. No, he didn't steal someone else. He stole yourself. He got you. He convinced you that you're someone that you're not. He convinced me that I am defined by my worst mistakes. But the truth is, none of us are defined by our worst mistakes. We might make mistakes, but that doesn't define who we are. At our core, we're something special. At our core, we're something holy. At our core, we're something spiritual. This is so important, the vocabulary of it, Chevra. It's so important. Whether you're talking to your children, and you're talking to children about mistakes that they made, or you're talking to children about a bad grade that they made, it doesn't mean that you're dumb. It doesn't mean that you're a bad student. It means that you got a bad grade. It doesn't define who you are. Think about how many people. Again, I don't want anyone to get autobiographical, but I'm venturing to say, without looking at any of you, that there's some nodding heads here. How many people at some point in school were told something by a teacher that convinced them something about themselves? Whether a teacher told them that they're this or a teacher told them that they're that. You're a troublemaker, or you're not smart enough, or you're not capable enough, or you're never going to amount to something. We all have experiences like that. That teacher, it's a gonev es atzmo. We have that voice in our head that tries to do that all the time. Our children have unlimited, boundless potential. They might make mistakes, but I'm never going to define my child by that mistake. I'm never going to define my child as a troublemaker, as someone who always gets in trouble. No, you get in trouble sometimes, but you can change just like anyone else can change. And we have to allow that inner voice not to hijack ourselves as well, that we might make mistakes, but don't ever let the Yetzer Hara convince you of something you're not. Don't ever let it rob you of who you really are. And so the Gneva, the thief, the thievery that's taking place in our parsha. We said, wait, is it mammon or is it a person? The answer is yes. The thief made a mistake. He stole. He stole money. That wasn't the worst part of it. The worst part of it is that 6 years later, he allowed that to define him. He no longer was someone who stole money, but he defined himself as a thief now. And therefore, he robbed himself of his essence. He robbed himself of who he truly is. I think that is an unbelievable idea. I think all of us experience it either educationally, all of us experience it in our own selves. Maybe it's a coworker that defines you. Don't ever let a mistake define you. Don't ever let a bad moment define you. Don't ever let a challenge define you. We go through them. We have to learn from them. We have to grow from them. But it never defines who we are. We always have to remember that we are a chelek eloka mima. We are a neshama tahora. We are special. And no matter what we do or no matter what anyone else says about us, it will never be able to define us. And so we saw three ideas in 30 minutes. Idea number one was from the Musar Adas, that what impresses Hashem is not the big stuff. It's the moments of sacrifice and hard work. It's the bricks that we build one by one in our own personal lives. Or Moshe Weinberger, idea number two, the shkalim and the kilayim, that we live in a world of confusion. We live in a world of kilayim, and our job is to bring the half shekel. The shekel is l'shkol, which means to analyze and to examine and to look into something and not be afraid to break it open, because we're going to bring clarity to a world that is so confused and is desperately in need of moral clarity. Idea number three was from Rabbi Ginsburg, that who is the real thief in our parsha? The real thief in our parsha is the inner voice inside of us that tries to rob us and to make us believe that we are something that we are not. And it robs us of who we truly are. And that's the most dangerous voice of all. With that, I wish everyone a good Shabbos.